Live from New York, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. We're going to talk about an innovative fiber that improves metabolic health from Michael Downey. When you consider how many tens of millions of Americans, actually more than 100 million adults, suffer from some form of prediabetes or diabetes, this could be very important information for them. Also today, we're going to look at the simple avocado. A new study reveals the fresh avocado substituted diet significantly changed the bad fats in the body, from the University of the Pacific. We're also going to examine nutrients affecting gene behavior. This is the latest study from the University of Cambridge, and a new study finds clear differences between organic and non-organic milk and meat. This is from Newcastle University in the United Kingdom. Also today, we're going to examine the discovery in leafy greens holds the key to gut health, University of Melbourne and University of York. Also today, diabetes patients can benefit from kamut. That's important. University of Florence. So replacing modern wheat with an ancient grain can benefit consumers with type 2 diabetes, according to this new study, and more on health. And we're going to look at a whole lot of issues. For example, I'm sure some of you saw that a study out there claiming that the diet soda is healthier than water. Yeah? You think so? Okay. Who funded the study? Oh, well, that answers it. And also, we're going to look at a short commentary from Jim Hightower. From other words, while soldiers who got to war risk death, big corporations that go to war reap perpetual profits. Also, dangerous speech. What happens when what you say today is considered a threat to corporate profits or to a government agency? John Whitehead from Op-Ed News. Would the founders be considered domestic extremists today? The short answer, yes. Let me put this in perspective, and then I will justify it later. George Washington, Alexander Hamilton, Thomas Paine, John Adams, all of the original founding fathers, they would all be on domestic terrorist watch list or dead, and we would have no founding fathers if this were at that time, if the same laws applied. So what does it say about all the different patriot groups and all the so-called constitutional conservatives on Fox who keep claiming, believe in the Constitution? Well, the people who wrote the Constitution today would all be considered domestic terrorists. I personally believe that this president would have had all of them in prison by now. No question about that. And remember all the people, including on non-commercial radio, including on Pacifica Radio, who wanted to see us go into Libya. Well, there are a lot of people. Libya is turning into one of the worst catastrophes on the planet. Where are all those pundits who cheered for its invasion? Adam Johnson, Aldernet, takes a look at that. Now, I've been saying that we're going to be sharing some insights from leading scientists and physicians about the safety and efficacy of vaccines. Well, today, we're going to take a look at the next in that series. We're going to look at Dr. Suzanne Humphreys in part one of what will be a 10-part series, Manufacturing Consent. Also, we're going to look at the Trans-Pacific Partnership. It is bad to the bone, and especially for smaller countries, and especially when it involves health issues. So we're going to hear something about that, this terrible 12-country deal. It's only going to be negative. There's no positive in here. And then how to respond to those who want our government to be Christian. Well, we have a response for that. So we have a lot to share. I don't know if we'll have a chance to get to part 7 of Making a Killing, the Untold Story of Psychotropic Drugs. If we do, we will. So let's begin. We have a lot to share. We know that fiber is important. In fact, of all the things you take in each day, what determines the quality of your gut health and what is called peristalsis, that's the wave-like rhythmic movement, much like a snake slithering on the ground, your intestine, if you were to put it on the ground and watch it in time-lapse photography, it'd look just like a giant snake. And how does it do that? Well, there are little electrical fibers in there that get it to move, and then there are biochemical reactions that allow certain pepsin, pepsinogen, bile, all these different chemicals to break down what's in your gut. But the single most important nutrient in your gut is fiber. And fiber is crucial. So now what we find is when most people eat a meal, most meals are unhealthy. And it causes your blood sugar to concentrate and it spikes up. That's bad. Behind that spike in your blood sugar is diabetes, cardiovascular health, and certain cancers. So the key is a post-meal glucose spike shouldn't happen. It's also been linked to Alzheimer's disease, kidney disease, and retinal damage. Yes, you can damage your eyes by what's in your gut. So the ingestion of simple sugars and starchy foods, bagels, donuts, buns, muffins, pizza, these are the primary causes of these glucose changes. Here's the good news. Researchers have identified a unique fiber called alpha-cyclodextrin. Cyclo, C-Y-C-L-O, dextrin, D-E-X-T-R-N. It can significantly reduce the glucose surges. And researchers demonstrate that volunteers who take alpha-cyclodextrin before consuming a carb food, such as bread, experienced a much lower blood sugar spike. Insulin increases were also significantly delayed and dramatically decreased. In fact, for 30 years, Japanese researchers have investigated another benefit of alpha-cyclodextrin, and what they discovered is that this compound also selectively absorbs and eliminates bad fats, such as trans fats, there's your French fries, or pretzels, or potato chips, and saturated fats. There's your arachidonic acid out of that hamburger and steak. So that's very good. And it does this before the blood, it reaches the bloodstream. Therefore, those bad fats don't get in your bloodstream and hurt cells. So that's terrific. So not only does this fat reduction reduce calories absorbed, it also reduces the harmful effects of the bad fats along with the elevation in your cholesterol. So all this is good news, and it's not that difficult. Why? Because the alpha-cyclodextrin is proven to be good for metabolic activity. And it can actually impact it substantially. For example, a sharp after-meal spike in your glucose level is associated with a 51% increased risk of cardiovascular event and an 89% risk of dying. Many people, especially older individuals, are challenged to find a way to reduce these dangerous after-meal rises in blood sugar. Now, of course, if you ate a healthy plant-based diet, you're getting so many different fibers, and those fibers slow down the rate of calories being absorbed, and they speed up the rate at which all the bacteria and the fibers and the dead cells are removed from the body. Hence, they keep you clean. So you're going to have a cleaner intestine, healthier digestion, less disease, and less chance of dying. I don't think people realize how many people have strokes or heart attacks within 2 hours after eating a meal. It's amazing that people don't get this, that when you have beans and grains and nuts and seeds and fibers and starchy vegetables and leafy vegetables, and the fibers in fruits like blueberries and raspberries and strawberries and pomegranate and cherries, that keeps your blood sugar at a nice level. But when you have anything that is converted quickly into sugar, your breads, for example, then it spikes it up. And when it spikes it up, all forms of bad things happen in your blood, including your blood gets thicker, and then the red blood cells begin to aggregate or clump together, and that makes you more susceptible to a stroke. So people put themselves at risk after having a regular meal. So generally, the alpha cyclodextrin at doses of 2, 5, and 10 grams was directly put into foods like white rice, which is a bad food, and it didn't cause that white rice to spike the blood sugar. So that's just something new. So let's just take a look here. When you have something really healthy, like healthy fiber, including the Japanese discovered cyclodextrin, the alpha cyclodextrin, you're able to take those sugar, starches, and fats that Americans eat that end up as abdominal fat on our bellies, and you reduce it. And this novel fiber also selectively blocks absorption of pro-inflammatory fats like your trans fats and saturated fats without interfering with beneficial fats like the omega-3s. You take it with meals and it improves your overall metabolic benefit and helps prevent heart attacks and strokes. Simple, easy, not complicated. Now, another thing that's not complicated is having, if you are a diabetic, a different type of grain. I'm suggesting kamut, K-A-M-U-T. And it's also, in its original term, it's a khorasan, K-H-O-R-A-S-A-N. This is in the University of Florence in Italy. Quote, replacing a modern wheat with an ancient grain can benefit consumers with type 2 diabetes. Researchers at the University of Florence, working in collaboration with Careggi University Hospital of Florence, found that kamut bran khorasan wheat could positively impact blood insulin and glucose. And so that's good. And this was published in the European Journal of Nutrition. So it's not just a wheat, it's the kind of wheat. Is it an ancient wheat? Is it unprocessed? Does it have all of its minerals? Yes, the answer is yes. The original ones have higher antioxidants, higher polyphenols, higher selenium, and then the modern wheat. So more magnesium, more phosphorus, more potassium, more zinc, and that made a big difference. Also, they found that when you take avocado, it benefits you, and especially if you want to have better fats in the diet. This is University of Pacific. Quote, can a single ingredient swap make an impact on health? According to the recently released Dietary Guidelines for Americans, small shifts in food can make a big difference, including a shift from solid fats to oils, like the oil in fresh avocados. On the heels of this advice, a new meta-analysis considered the best evidence and an unbiased overview of the body of knowledge on a specific topic. Published in the Journal of Clinical Lipidology, adds to the growing body of research that supports use of avocados in lieu of solid fats in foods that have higher saturated fat content. That would be like a steak or butter. The research, quote, impact of avocado-enriched diet on plasma lipoproteins, a meta-analysis conducted at the University of Pacific and independent funded, looked at 10 unique avocado studies. And it found that when you're eating avocados, the fat in the avocado helps change the fats in your body so you have healthier fats. And avocado also is an anti-inflammatory. Now, this question's been asked many times. and we'll address what the University of Cambridge in the United Kingdom says. This is published in Nature Microbiology. Is it possible to change your genes, the gene behavior, through nutrients? An article published in the current issue reveals that genes not only influence metabolism, but the metabolic byproducts influence the behavior of genes as well. Quote, the classical view that genes control how nutrients are broken down into important molecules, but we've shown that the opposite is true too. How the nutrients break down affects how our genes behave. And that was from Dr. Rouser at the University of Cambridge. So in lay language, what does this mean? It means that when you eat, let's say, an unhealthy food, it can have an unhealthy impact upon your gene. It can alter your gene. When you deal with problems by being just strictly emotional, when you look for drama in everything, when you need to be right about everything, when you're constantly argumentative, when you just don't feel comfortable and relaxed, when you can't chill out, when you have to impose your thoughts upon other people, that changes your gene. None of it for the better. However, when you're taking your nutrients, your B complex, vitamin A, vitamin C, vitamin E, coenzyme Q10, zinc, selenium, that's actually feeding the DNA. Hence, the body recognizes you're doing something good for the gene. When you are meditating, the body recognizes you're doing something good for the gene. When you're listening to music that soothes and calms, when you're exercising, when you're in nature and you're breathing in all those wonderful ions in nature, when you are just being at one in peace with nature, the body recognizes you're harmonizing your internal gene energy with the larger external energy of the trees. And hence, these genes are communicating. And that's why we always feel better being in a beautiful environment. Ask someone, how do you feel sitting on a crowded, dirty, noisy street on Amsterdam Avenue at a restaurant where you have to almost yell to hear yourself? The stench of unpicked up garbage is substantial. And you're eating, you know, I wouldn't want you to take a look in the kitchen of most of those restaurants. And you're eating food. And now imagine that. Imagine being on a tropical isle. We're eating something that's fresh. You're relaxing. You're walking on the beach barefooted. You're feeling the breezes. You're looking at the sunset. You're with someone that you really love and adore being with. Two different ways your body responds. One is relaxed. The other is tense. One is expanding energy and harmonizing with what's in your environment. The other is negative harmonizing, adapting, maladaptation. So it makes a big difference to your genes, to your DNA. And that's important. Also, a new study on Newcastle University, which is in the United Kingdom, found the following, that organic meat, though I'm opposed to all meat, it's still taking an animal, sentient being that does not need to be taken. We don't need anything ever in our body from an animal. But organic milk contains 40% more conjugated linoleic acid. That's good. Organic milk contains slightly higher concentration of iron, vitamin E, and some carotenoids. And organic meat had slightly lower concentration of saturated fatty acids. So in this study, for those who do not intend to become vegan, the argument is that you're going to be healthier if you eat healthier animal products. Of course, we would actually be far healthier if we didn't eat any animal products, because all the studies show that. But not everyone's going to change. And finally, from the University of Melbourne and the University of York, a critical discovery about low bacteria feed on an unusual sugar molecule found in leafy green vegetables could hold the key to explaining how good bacteria protect our gut and promote health. The findings suggest that leafy greens are essential for feeding good gut bacteria, limiting the ability of bad bacteria to colonize the gut by shutting them out of the prime real estate of the gut. This is what the researchers in Melbourne in the United Kingdom identified, a previously unknown enzyme used by bacteria and fungi and other organisms to feed on the unusual but abundant sugar that's in the green vegetables. Now, you won't taste this sugar. It's not discernible to the taste, but it's there. So each year, green leafy vegetables like spinach, arugula, produce the sugar on an enormous scale globally. And the researchers published the results in Nature Chemical Biology. So, quote, bacteria in the gut, such as crucial protective strains of E. coli, use SQ as a source of energy, and E. coli provides a protective barrier that prevents growth and colonization by bad bacteria. Because the good bugs are taking up all the habitat real estate, so it means the more green salad you eat, the more sulfur you get into your system, that's good for the bacteria. And it's bad for bad bacteria because it kills it. So you want garlic, you want onions, you want shallots, you want chives. Yeah, all good. So the more green vegetables you have, the more sulfur you get in Brussels sprouts, one of your best, asparagus, big time, and broccoli. All good. And that would help you. That's the latest. I'm Gary Noll. Please stay with us. Back in a moment. Got a lot more to share. Nice to have you with us, everyone. I'm Gary Noll. Before we go to some of our audio clips, I want to share this with you. This is from Jim Hightower. War is hell. Unless, of course, you happen to be a global corporate peddler of rockets, drones, bombs, and all the other hellish weaponry of military conflict. In that case, war is manna from hell. Indeed, with U.S. military forces enmeshed in at least 135 countries just in 2015 alone, plus chicken hawks as Donald Trump and Ted Cruz are manically beating their flabby chests and searching for even more military adventurism. This perpetual warmongering is music to the ears of the people who serve as the CEOs and the biggest investors in the war machine. It means a windfall of perpetual profits for them. In a rare admission of their war profiteering ethic, a group of major military contractors spoke late last year about how splendid war is in leaked tapes from a wealthy investor conference reported by The Intercept. Top weapon makers exulted about the spreading horror of the Islamic State and escalating wars across Middle East and Africa. Hailing the rising conflict in Syria, for example, Lockheed Martin's honcho Bruce Tanner enchanted the potential investors with the happy news that Lockheed's profits would enjoy, quote, an intangible lift because of the dynamics of that war's environment and sales of our products. Raytheon CEO Tom Kennedy chimed in that his corporation was upbeat because, quote, a significant uptick for defense solutions across the broad spectrum in multiple countries. And all of these masters of war celebrated the joyous news that Congress had just delivered $607 billion budget to the Pentagon, meaning more sales and more profits for war investors. Quote, we think we did very well, exclaimed one. Many go to war to die, but few go to war and thrive. So I agree with that. Just imagine if we took all the profit out of making war. Boy, you can bet real quick we'd have peace. Take all the profit out of medicine, which we should, so that we have only one universal health care that anybody can get any kind of medicine, the doctor of their choice, alternative, holistic, mainstream, whatever they choose, and not go broke. Doable? You bet it's doable. Take the profit out of things and then see what the results are. It would be a lot healthier. This is from Carrie Welder of Natural Blaze. A new study claiming diet beverages may be more beneficial to weight loss than water was funded by Coke, Pepsi, and other softy conglomerates. The analysis published in the issue of the International Journal for Obesity by Professor University of Bristol concluded that low-energy sweeteners in place of sugar, quote, in children and adults leads to reduced energy intake and body weight, and possibly also when compared with water, end quote. The study, a, quote, systematic review titled Does Low-Energy Sweetener Consumption Affect Energy Intake and Body Weight, disclosed it was partly funded by the International Life Sciences Institute, that the name seems neutral, and its board of directors includes qualified scientists, other members not so much. Doctors from Nestle, Mars Chocolate, Unilever, Pepsi-Cola, and Coca-Cola serve on its board of directors. So, the next time someone says, have a cola, it's better than water. If you want to lose weight, no, it's not better than water. And that's why we cannot trust anything the media says without first doing our homework to see what's behind it. Also, we never hear a word about human rights in the countries that we support. Egypt is the latest one from the New York Times from Amina Ismail. It says, hundreds vanishing in Egypt as crackdown widens, activists say. And then it goes on to talk about how the activists, now these are peace activists, these are not terrorists, they're not identified with any terrorist group, they simply want freedom and a democracy, and they're the ones being arrested and tortured, beaten. And who's supplying the money to maintain them in power? The United States. But that's true also in Bahrain, Saudi Arabia, Qatar, Kuwait, and United Arab Emirates, all around the world. I don't think we have found a dictator or a military junta we can't embrace and support. Here's something I'd like for you to think about. In fact, time permitting, I'm going to open this up after our next audio break for you to give your input on. Not only has free speech become profane, obscene, uncouth, not to be uttered in so-called public places, but in more and more cases, the United States government deems it to be downright dangerous and in some instances illegal. It has become particularly intolerant of speech that challenges its power, reveals its corruption, exposes its lies, and encourages the citizens to push back against its many injustices. Indeed, there is a long and growing list of the kinds of speech that the government considers dangerous enough to red flag and subject to censorship, surveillance, investigation, and prosecution. This includes intolerant speech. What's intolerant speech? If I choose to challenge vaccine safety and efficacy and I have good science backing me up and it's not my opinion, that is now considered intolerant. If I choose not to buy a genetically engineered seed, but rather buy a heirloom, locally growing organic seed, that's considered intolerant speech if I speak out on it. If I choose to march in front of Indian Point and to talk about the dangers, proven dangers, of an archaic energy system that is not serving our needs, that is considered intolerant speech. Also, any conspiratorial speech. So all of you who have believed that 9/11 official report was wrong, had lots of fallacies, including, by the way, the actual chief authors of the report, that's considered conspiratorial speech. I just posted a video. It's only a 2 seconds video on my website that shows clearly, for the first time, I don't know where it's been, but it's never been seen before, a missile going into the Pentagon, not an airplane, that would be considered conspiratorial speech. To talk about the corruption of the Trans-Pacific Partnership, that's considered now conspiratorial speech, or treasonous speech, to talk about the corruption within our body politic, and or incendiary speech, where you're asking people to boycott products or corporations, to take your money out of certain banks, that's incendiary speech. Or inflammatory speech, that would virtually be everything that Martin Luther King would say today, or Malcolm X. Of course, they wouldn't be alive for 15 seconds today. A radical speech, anything that's not conform to the what is considered the acceptable way of talking. Anti-government speech. These are all now considered unacceptable. So if you don't believe me, just stand on the corner or in a courtroom at a city council meeting or on a university campus and recite some of the rhetoric used by the likes of Thomas Jefferson, Patrick Henry, John Adams, and Thomas Paine. But do this. You want to do it in an interesting way, and John Whitehead suggests this. Don't attribute who said it. For that matter, just try reciting the Declaration of Independence, which, as you know, rejects tyranny, establishes Americans as sovereign beings, and portrays the government as evil, and provides a detailed laundry list of abuses that are as relevant today as they were 240 years ago. What would you imagine would be the outcome? Try suggesting, as Thomas Jefferson or Benjamin Franklin did, that Americans should not only take up arms, but be prepared to shed blood in order to protect their liberties. I bet you would find yourself on a terrorist watch list, on a no-fly watch list, and vulnerable to being rounded up by government agents. Quote, what country can preserve its liberties if their rulers are not warned from time to time that their people preserve the right of resistance? That was Thomas Jefferson. But that's what we're dealing with today. Wasn't it Thomas Paine and the Marquis de Lafayette and Patrick Henry who found that they needed to defend themselves against the government if it violates their rights? And today, if you defend yourself against our government, you're considered a domestic extremist and hence a terrorist. In fact, during the protests in Ferguson, Missouri, and Baltimore, Maryland, numerous journalists were arrested while covering the region's civil unrest and the conditions that spawned it. And these attempts to muzzle the press were concerted, top-down efforts to restrict the fundamental First Amendment rights of the public and the press. For many, including John Whitehead, the message is clear. Whether a journalist is acting alone or is affiliated with an established news source, the government has no qualms about subjecting that person to harassment, arrest, jail time, and trumped-up charges and for exposing the government. And the current president of the United States has done more to bring whistleblowers, those who found wrongdoings and wanted to tell the public, to the prison system. And yet, people refuse to accept this reality. But it is a reality. So what are we to make of the media that parrots the government's position or lobbyist positions or special interest position? But one of those special interests rarely is the American public and what is for the common good. Here are thoughts. What have you seen? What should be your response? That's our talkback question, 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. And I want you to call in if you have something you'd like to share on that. Now, for those of you who think that vaccines are safe and effective, believe they are because, well, surely 900,000 physicians currently and maybe 20 million over the last 30, 40 years, they wouldn't all be wrong, would they? The pharmacists, nurses, the heads of CDC and the FDA, the top officials at the immunological journals, toxicology journals, it's simply not possible they could be wrong, even a small percentage of them. After all, we put them in positions of total trust. We would not believe they could violate the public health and that of our children and babies. Unless, of course, they're all wrong. Dr. Suzanne Humphreys has spent more than 15,000 hours documenting safety and efficacy. This is just part one of what will be an ongoing series over the next 12 months. This is called Manufactured Consent. I won't play a lot of it. And this was done at a Copenhagen conference just about 4 months ago.
Choices you make medically have never been on the basis of informed consent. In 2015, informed consent is even less likely to happen than it would have been 10 or even 30 years ago. In 1997, the World Health Organization formulated a strategy which was put into a book called The Strategic Plan, which laid out a map to completely change the way people thought about vaccines. The plan had key points, which were using the media to structure messages that shaped public opinion to co-opt or persuade key opinion people in all levels of society, medical, lay, and entertainment, to get pro-vaccine spokespeople at every level conveying one message and one message only. This plan emphasized private-public partnership and philanthropy, with the aim to make vaccines a core topic in society. Anyone who reads this book can clearly see that this was a plan which would result in what I would call a slow cooking of human frogs from cold water, hopefully that we wouldn't even notice what was happening, to get us all to a point where we could see nothing else other than the dogma. Part of that plan came to fruition in a big way when Bill Gates stepped up to take his place in the World Health Organization plan. Everybody know who Bill Gates is? Okay. People who are part of this plan are called stakeholders, not just by me, but it's an acceptable term. Private stakeholders have existed for the last 20 years, but never more obviously than in 2015. The whole public face of vaccination has changed, and a large part of that change has been due to the involvement of private individuals. In 2010, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation donated $10 billion, with a B, dollars, U.S. dollars, to make 2010 to 2020 the decade of vaccines. When this announcement was made in 2010, when I was just starting to wake up to the issues with vaccination, I had no concept of what $10 billion could do. But today, with that plan in action, with all that money, the vaccine stakeholders have planted flags everywhere, with some startling results. In 2015, the focus in the United States was on making vaccines mandatory for all people, and they were successful in some places, making vaccines a lifestyle event for all people from cradle to grave, and broadening the appeal of live viral vaccines for their immune system benefits, not just for their disease-preventing benefits. The World Health Organization's strategic plan was printed first in 1993, and then it was updated in 1997. And it morphed into the global immunization vision and strategy, which Bill Gates often makes reference to in his publicity. And you can see it right here in that last paragraph, the Global Alliance. Today we have a computer software billionaire, the pharmaceutical industry, academia, and the U.S. Department of Homeland Security, and the World Health Organization all speaking and working in unison towards the same goals. These alliances should have anyone who listens and watches asking lots of questions. Because the goals are to restrict our health freedom, to censor what we read and can say, and remove our ability to choose what goes into our bodies. 2015 will be remembered by those who pay attention as one of unprecedented activity in the war against a new public menace, the vaccine hesitant. What we saw was a Disneyland spectacle where about 140 people were infected with measles. Shortly after that, we had a surge of media outlets and the CDC making announcements with half-truths, and California losing its ability to make conscientious objections, philosophical objections. We have ongoing state battles, many of which have been overturned. And you probably don't hear about that, but there have been a lot of success on the basis of informed parents and honest politicians. So don't give up hope. We have an ongoing lawsuit with two virologists that were formerly employed by Merck Pharmaceuticals, Merck Vaccines, who are suing them on the basis of fraudulent testing of the mumps portion of the MMR vaccine. And that's part of this whole thing that we're seeing. And that lawsuit is continuing. The Department of Justice ruled this year that it will go ahead and they will continue the lawsuit. We had a fellow, who I'll talk more about in a bit, named William Thompson, we called a whistleblower, because he came out and he said, you know, there was a collusion for these four scientists that I worked with and myself to cover up data that showed higher autism rates in African-American boys. But then he went quiet. And now we're seeing censorship of any anti-vaccine views, even of delaying vaccines or altering the schedule at all, and portrayal of refusers as insane and obstinately stupid. And we're seeing whole new propaganda, which is going to be the focus of most of my talk today, which centers around a very important medical paper that came out in 2015, which underlies a lot of what's happening here and reinforces the goals. So here is some of what the popular press had to say. Forbes magazine, has anyone heard of Forbes magazine? Yeah. Forbes magazine puts it bluntly. This was published August 4th, 2015, and it says, scare the crap out of anti-vaccine parents. But remember, in order to do that, they have to restrict information. Because when doctors and parents have all the facts and make the connections between their children's sickness and vaccines, they want to know more, and they'll start looking for themselves. So in order to plug holes in the dam that's beginning to crack, journalists also have to be censored. Dr. Paul Offit, have you heard of him? He's a figurehead pro-vaccine doctor in the USA who makes recommendations to doctors and advisory panels. Says that journalists who discuss or print anti-vaccine fact should be jailed. Most journalists are now terrified to say anything that could lose sponsorship. But the few who are still interested in balanced discussions must be censored, according to not just Paul Offit, but Kathleen Sebelius, the U.S. Secretary of the Department of Health and Human Services, who served from 2009 to 2014. But in 2010, this is a pretty famous little magazine in the United States, you might have it here, she stated that the media outlets should not give equal views to vaccine critics. This has long been the ethos, though, even when the evidence and arguments are well-founded. As stated in this Federal Register from the Department of Health and Human Services from 1984, any possible doubts, whether or not well-founded, about the safety of the vaccine cannot be allowed to exist. Doesn't get more plain language than that. And here it is right here. This is just a copy of it from 1984. The open threats to non-vaccinators recently reached out in every possible direction. Doctors are under threat everywhere. But in the USA, journalists who parrot misinformation call for us to have our licenses revoked. Vaccination is a medical no-brainer, don't you know? And a public health home run. According to Peter Lipson, well, Roman and I, in Dissolving Illusions, put some serious gashes into that fallacy of vaccination being a no-brainer and a public health home run. But Lipson places vaccination alongside clean water and fluoridation, of all things. He's totally ignorant of the fact that clean, non-fluoridated water was indeed one of the major public health successes, and that vaccination has wrongly hijacked its credit. And that fluoride, just like aluminium, has no important role in the human body. But then he goes through a long diatribe, and he winds up his arm, and he punches out at doctors, saying that any doctor dissent should be met with investigation, warnings, suspended licensing, and, he's thought about this a lot, 150 hours of propaganda brainwashing. This type of Chairman Mao ballistic stupidity is right up there with Forbes' other article that was put on the cluster fire in January of 2015. In the most highly vaccinated era ever, the growing sentiment is to sue non-vaccinating parents. Isn't this irrational? Because in every outbreak of measles in history, there have been large chunks of vaccinated people who became infected and had the capacity to spread measles to others. Should we sue them as well? Perhaps we should sue everyone. Or perhaps we should sue the dead government officials who sanctioned a measles vaccine program in 1963 with the goal to eradicate measles in the United States by 1967 with just one measles vaccine.
And that was Dr. Suzanne Humphreys. There will be 9 more segments you will hear over the coming many months, as well as many other experts in the other fields. Now, let's say hello to John from Greenwich, Connecticut. John, your comments, please.
Thank you. The reason I'm calling is to thank you for your good work, Gary, and democracy, use it or lose it. And I thank you for taking to task all the people, all the untruths in our society that has been perpetuated by people who are self-serving.
I appreciate those kind words. Thank you, John. Now, we don't have a lot of time left, so what I'm going to do is we're going to go to how to respond to those who want our government to be Christian. This is short, so it'll fit in the remaining period of time.
I was thinking that you seem to have forgotten the phrase separation of church and state, but the one thing I did forget was just how divisive and dishonest and distasteful someone like you can be. I've sat here today and listened to you pander to these people, but you don't actually care about them, or you wouldn't be sitting here reinforcing their ignorance and prejudices.
You heard that, caller. She just called you ignorant and prejudiced.
I do not think everyone in America is ignorant. Far from it. But we are today probably the most uneducated, underread, and illiterate nation in the Western Hemisphere, which makes it all the more puzzling to me why the biggest question on your small mind is whether or not little Johnny is going to recite the Pledge of Allegiance every morning. I'll tell you something else, Mr. Brickett. I have had it up to here with you and your phony issues and your Yankee Doodle yakking. If you like reciting the Pledge of Allegiance every day, then I think you should do it in the car, in the shower, wherever the mood strikes you. But don't try to tell me when or where I have to say or do or salute anything, because I am an American too. And that is what being an American is all about. And another thing, I am sick and tired of being made to feel that if I am not a member of a little family with 2.4 children who goes just to Jerry Falwell's church and puts their hands over their hearts every morning, that I am unreligious, unpatriotic, and un-American. Because I have news for you, Mr. Brickett. All liberals are not kooks any more than all conservatives are fascists. And the last time I checked, God was neither a Democrat nor a Republican. And just for your information, yes, I am a liberal, but I am also a Christian. And I get down on my knees and pray every day on my own turf, on my own time. And one of the things that I pray for, Mr. Brickett, is that people with power will get good sense, and people with good sense will get power, and that the rest of us will be blessed with the patience and the strength to survive the people like you in the meantime.
There are liberal Christians, something that people living in New York City seem to have forgot. And I thought that was well said. So thank you on that. We're going to close out today's show by just some common sense. We should close down the International Monetary Fund. It's a criminal organization. The World Bank, it's a complete waste of time. It destroys communities. It supports the corrupt corporations that exploit the disadvantaged around the world. Between the failed policies, including today. Wall Street is buoyant today. Why? Because more Americans are going back to work, because we're opening up factories, we're reindustrializing communities. No, because they're hopeful that we'll have a quantitative easing number 4 and give out $100 billion a month to the banks and the major corporations to see where enters so they can continue just gorging themselves. At the same time that's happening, all you have to do is look at the retail outlets. I said you got to take your time if you want to see the truth and not look at the New York Times, Wall Street Journal, because you won't find the truth there. You'll find partial truths. Look for how many other retail outlets are closing and what this means. Kmart is closing 269 stores, including 154 in the United States. That's Walmart, I should say. Kmart is closing down more than 24 stores over the next several months. JCPenney will permanently shutter 47 stores after closing more than 40 last year. Macy's decided it needs to shutter 36 stores and lay off 2,500 employees. The Gap is closing 175 stores in North America. We have another 84 stores of the Aeropostale closing. Finish Line has announced 150 stores shuttering. Sears has shut down 600 stores over the past year, but still sales are still declining. And that's just a small part of the stores closing. What you're also seeing is you're seeing major banks that loan to stores and loan to corporations, especially in the energy factors, they cannot get their money back. So that means the banks are on the line for taking in these bankruptcies. And jobs are disappearing. Americans are feeling impoverished for good reason. The middle income to low income jobs, they're disappearing. Or they're downsizing. They're no longer living wage jobs, but rather survival at best jobs. This is part of the neoliberal line of both the corporate and Democrats and Republicans. And so when you look at the average wage and you ask, how can you possibly survive on that? The answer is you can't. And instead of looking to help the employees, the major corporations are downsizing those employees, taking away benefits, and putting it all to their stock, the people who own the stock in the companies. So we have more Americans out of work, over 105 million. We have more Americans with part-time work, and we have more Americans who are working two jobs than ever before in our history. Also on top of that, we have a lot of people who cannot pay their bills. Now, I'm going to talk about what it means to not be able to pay your bills on tomorrow's program. And just to give you an idea, Greece is one simple example. Greece was told in order to get another $86 billion that they had to privatize. Who got the $86 billion? It was to the bond owners. It was to the banks. It didn't go to the Greek people. But in the process of giving those who invested in Greece's debt with the expectation of getting a big return, and they have, they had to privatize. Already, under the terms of the latest agreement, Greece's Syriza government, they have now opened up and have sold off their airports. Everything in Greece is for sale now. Everything. Everything from the national lottery to the ports to the swaths of Corfu. Corporations are scrambling to get a piece of the action. In fact, in the first wave of buyouts, German airport operator Fraport purchased the right to operate 14 regional airports in Greece, and many of them are located in popular tourist destinations. And that meant that that money, instead of going to the Greek people, went to foreigners who will then flip the property or exploit it. So everything that the Greeks might have at one time had that was for little or no money, now is going to be very expensive. So all you've done to Greece, to the people, to the country, is you've impoverished it, you've ghettoized it, you've destroyed it. Austerity doesn't work. It's never worked. It can't work. How can you take people who don't have anything, now take away what little they have in pensions, and then expect the economy to boom? It can't. to the Greek people. We have many people listening today from Greece. My suggestion, boycott your government. It is totally and completely corrupt. Those bastards sold you out. And let them know what you think of people that are sellouts. Throw them out of office. And then go off the euro. The euro is a completely ghost currency. The euro union is broke. And then start over and start rebuilding your own economy. Go back to your own original currency. And you'll go through a rough time for about a year, but then you'll get back up on your feet again. More on that and how you can do it on an upcoming program. I'm Gary Noll. Thank you all for listening. Have a nice day.